You have been in Knoxville for about a year now, right? Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you ended up in why East Tennessee? How did you end up in Knoxville?
So the story of my arrival in Knoxville is that I was working in Birmingham, which is my home city. So the accent there is something more along the lines of this. It's in a very minor key. And if I went around here talking like this, nobody would understand what I was talking about. So I was working in Birmingham at the Birmingham School of Acting on a part-time basis. And I was also freelancing and doing my own coaching outside of that. And I've been doing that for about 3 years. And I decided that I wanted to go back into a school and work in a full-time capacity with students. I really enjoy the kind of deeper work of taking students through a longer journey. I like to have that time with them. And I had decided, having freelanced, that that wasn't quite what I wanted to keep doing. So I was looking for full-time jobs in England and was going through the process of attending interviews. And I was Googling, and I think I Googled full-time voice teacher or something. And the job at UT came up.
Wow.
And I didn't say at the top of the advert on Google where the job was. So I read the entire job description and thought, wow, that's really cool. This is quite forward thinking for the UK in terms of, you know, having a professional theatre and working with your students in that capacity. And I finished reading the ad, and then at the very bottom it said Knoxville, Tennessee. And I thought, ah, okay, that's quite a long way away.
Exotic Knoxville.
So, and then I applied, and that's how it happened.
You clearly had some success as an actress and working on the stage. I mean, I read it was you were at Shakespeare's Globe. You were even at the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, right? What led you to teaching? Why the change to, okay, I think teaching is what I want to do?
The shortest answer that I can give to that question is that I found performing quite stressful on a personal level. And as you will know, as a performer, you know, there's a process you have to go through in order to get a job.
Right.
And I found the process of auditioning quite stressful. I'm quite an introverted person. So I have this strange combination of an introverted personality, but my kind of giftedness is a little more extroverted, it would seem.
Yeah.
So in the end, I just could not cope with the stress that I felt during the process of trying to secure a job, even though, as you say, I was quite successful, and the process of performing. And I tried and tried to negotiate it. And then I sort of fell into teaching by accident and found that I really liked it and was quite good at enabling other actors to be really good at using their voice. And suddenly then that seemed to be a really good fit for me and my skills.
What is it for you about the human voice? Where does that fascination come from?
I think the fascination for me with voice and speech was, you know, that switch was tripped when I was at drama school myself.
Right.
And my voice and speech teachers were fascinating to me. They had a real deep understanding of language and how that helps you to be expressive as an actor. And they also knew lots of stuff about poetry and language and structure and form of speech, modes of speech, how to really kind of tap into your personal potential for expression just through the sound you make. So they really kind of switched me onto it. And of course, I sang and used my voice as an actor.
Right.
So I like to tell stories and muck about and do funny voices. And the more you do this, the endlessly fascinating and deep it becomes. You can never, I mean, like with anything, but you can never feel, it's like unraveling an endless ball of wool. I feel like I'm never going to get to the end and I'm never going to know everything.
And you've been kind of touted as the accent guru in town, right? So why accents? Are accents sort of a special concentration for you?
It's really odd because since I've arrived here, that's become the thing, that's my little label. And I love love it. And of course, it's totally part of my work and what I do with actors. I guess here at UT, quite specifically, it maybe takes up more of my time than it normally would because I end up coaching on the shows at the Clarence Brown.
Right.
So, of course, they can, you know, we can go from, I don't know, Cockney to Welsh to Canadian, you know, there's a whole range of things going on. So it does form quite a bit of my work, and it's really fun.
This is going to sound like a silly question, but how important is it that somebody get the accent right on stage? I mean, so many times you hear, even in movies and television, people just sort of botch the accents or they go in and out, sometimes really good, and suddenly by the end it's gone. And I just want to know what kind of discipline it takes for the student to really execute the accent on stage. What kind of commitment does that take?
I would say that it takes a huge commitment to really learn an accent and to be able to speak in that accent authentically. So that you, there's a difference, I think, between an accent owning you and you owning an accent. So what you want as an actor is to be to communicate authentically and truthfully, and that the accent's part of your performance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of holistic sense of things working together. And in order to get to that point as an actor, it takes a really huge amount of structured, detailed, and focused work on learning this entirely new speech system.
Right.
You could think of it like a gymnast learns a tumbling routine. So if you think of an accent, your mouth and your articulators and the way that you shape the sound you make, all of those kind of tumble through a familiar routine of shapes and moves every day.
Right, right, right.
So the new accent is going to tumble through its own familiar gymnastic routine of shapes and grooves.
And that's going to take some new muscle work, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And so your mouth is going to be required potentially to learn new sounds your accent may not have. So if you were a French or a German speaker and you wanted to learn an English accent, you probably don't have the TH sound. So a word like think or
sure.
then.
Right.
So you might have to learn a whole new shape and sound as
yeah.
part of the accent too. You know, the key thing really is to be utterly specific, and voice work is muscle work.
Yeah, 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 right.
So if you haven't taken your muscles to the gym and you haven't done
That's
the
right.
right kind of workouts, you know, and created these new shapes enough so they become part of you, the
mm-hmm.
same way as your own speech system is part of you, then, you know, there will be inconsistencies.
I have heard you say, and I'm very interested in this, what about different periods of history? Does an accent differ from, say, Shakespearean England to Victorian England? And with your work at UT, you just did A Midsummer Night's Dream and A Christmas Carol, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference there? What are you telling students about period regionalism?
So that's a really good point. And I think with any accent, you've got to make sure you have the right accent for the period of the play. So the age of the character, you know, where is the play set, geographical references. And as you say, the English that would have been spoken at the time that Shakespeare was writing his plays would have, we think, used some roticity. That's different to roasting a chicken, just to be clear. And roticity means that whenever you see an R in the spelling of a word, you say the R. So in a word like car, C-A-R,
right.
for me in my accent, I say car, which is two sounds, a K and an R. For a speaker of a so-called general American accent, something maybe we think of as Midwest, you would say car, and you would
right.
hit the R quite hard, and that's roticity. So we think that at the time that Shakespeare was writing his plays, that the accents people had in that part of England were actually rhotic accents. So if you wanted to work in original pronunciation, that would be a feature.
So in Shakespeare's time, just to clarify for me, that the R was at the
mm-hmm.
end of...
We
okay.
think that's what happened,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
We think those accents were rhotic.
You've said, and I quote, and I hope I get this quote right, because
okay.
if I don't, you can let me know.
I will.
The intriguing thing about accent and dialect is that sound and language is always evolving, so there are always new discoveries to be made. What are some of the discoveries that you've made since being here in America and East Tennessee?
Wow. I think one of the fun things was just before I moved here, I was working on a play called Inherit the Wind, which is set in a kind of fictional town in East Tennessee. So it was an unusual and happy coincidence. And I remember telling the actors that speakers in East Tennessee would use the same sound in the words pin and pen. So right. The it and the air become the same sound. And they said, really, are you sure? And I said, no, honestly, like, here you go. And I played them some examples.
Yeah.
And the first week that I was here, I went to the bank and I heard someone do that. And it was very exciting.
So, cause it really is true.
Yeah, because it really is true. Because there are some sounds in accents and we think, really, you do that? And then, you know, you hear the speaker and you go, yeah, they do. So I think but it's endlessly fascinating. Because
right.
Speech and language is always evolving. So like I said before, it's like a big ball of wool that you're unraveling and you can never get to the end.
And you never get to the end,
no,
right,
never.
Right, absolutely.
Because as long as we're alive, this will keep unraveling.
Abigail Langham is assistant professor of vocal production in the University of Tennessee's theater department. Abby, thanks so much for being here today. It was really a pleasure to talk to you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kevin. It was great to talk to you too.